Hello and welcome to pod 46 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on the official Palace app, eagles.cpfc.co.uk, YouTube, and all of our social media channels, which now includes TikTok. Sorry to all you people over 30 over there that froth at the mouth at the thought of us joining another social media channel. So what have we got on today's podcast? Well, we've got a very nice extended interview with Gary Cahill by Premier League Productions. We've also got Roy's press conference. But first up, we're going to start the pod with the return of Statman.
Statman. Statman.
Yes, that's right. Statman is back. And we're both back. We're back in the Malcolm Allison Lounge, where it first started.
It did. What first started?
Me and you.
Did we start here?
I think so. Okay. Probably.
It was, yeah, beautiful. I remember setting eyes on you, and I knew that we were onto something special. So it's lovely to be back here. New decade and everything. You finally had me on then. You know,
we've had a bit of a break from pods because Christmas was so hectic.
Yeah.
Because around the, you know, all the busy time when there's loads of matches. Also, you get to December and everyone has suddenly realizes they've got a holiday to take, and they lose it if they don't take it. So everyone's just working match days, and we had loads of stuff saved, loads of lovely content saved up.
I love all these excuses you're whittling off just to make sure, to make me feel better.
There wasn't anything to put on the pod because it was all things like lovely, we'd go around houses and giving kids presents.
Yeah.
Well,
you know. That was lovely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lovely shoot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. Royale International did well out of that, didn't
they? Thank you. Official logistics partner, yes. sorry. Before we dive into it then, let's chat more stat. What were you up to?
You're trying to get that catchphrase in, aren't you? I'd see you drop these in every time.
I've done it three times. I just think everyone needs a slogan, don't they? You know, yeah. Alan Partridge had his. Aha!
You've been waiting for me to go, that's really good, that. Well, anyway, well done. Less chat, more stat.
You've never said it before, but I'm pleased it's been well received now. I finally dropped it in. No, before we go into it, where were you last night?
Oh, Mamma Mia the party.
As you do. What on earth is Mamma Mia the party?
It's for my mother-in-law's 60th birthday. So 60th birthday today. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Tonight we're going to a Heston Blumenthal restaurant for the part two of the celebrations.
Ooh.
I know Mr. C has done very well.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Mamma Mia the party. So it's like Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
But it's set in a Greek taverna. It's at the O2, but it's set, and you get a three-course meal, and there's kind of a little story going on. They're doing some acting, but they do all the numbers. It's very good. It's worth going and drinking at.
I've never been more interested. So that sounds fantastic. Sign me up to that.
I mean it's pricey. Well, it's probably the same cost as a premium seat at Palace, but
oi includes that though.
But it's a good laugh.
Okay,
it's pretty trashy but good.
Okay, and it's on for a few more weeks. I mean, we're very much plugging this, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, on for never ending.
Get your tickets, number.
I can't promote it, can I? We don't have an official immersive theatre partner yet.
Yet. Leave it with me, though. Leave it with me. And before we stat as well, new signing joined. Obviously, the first person they reel in, before they've even met Roy, they go, have a look at this cottage at the training ground. Open up the door. This is Christopher Grierson, Palace TV presenter.
Usually, not this time.
He met Roy first.
Yeah.
Disgrace.
Absolutely gutted.
Disgrace.
Different one this time, actually, for those interested. Yeah, he had the medical the night before, Thursday night.
Yeah.
Came in on the Friday and finished the medical at the training ground, the last bit. So normally we do everything in Soho, but this time he came there. Huh. And then they were waiting for all the paperwork to go through.
Yeah.
And then once it had all been agreed, it just happened that training was about to start, so he went out and trained. So we were all set up with a green screen and everything, and then we had to take it all down because it's in the same room that the press conference was in, and we knew that Roy would want to talk about him in the press conference, so we knew it had to be announced before one, so we couldn't actually do the interview before it was announced, affecting my process.
They don't think about you enough, Chris. If there's my one criticism here, think more about Chris. That time that there was bacon in the media room, And do they not know this guy is vegan?
Yeah, it's not just that. I mean, it's just bacon. Even if I ate meat, just bacon on the floor and you're interviewing him.
Yeah.
We won't talk about that interview room because there's still issues. It was full of old advertising boards the other day and I couldn't even use it. I had to kick off about it.
Right, so.
In a nice way.
Right.
It made it into the post-match report, but hopefully...
Ex-Hollyoaks star kicks off at Palace. Yeah. Rightly so, mate. You know? Yeah.
Don't get me started on the cheese and the potatoes. And that. Anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
I won't dub.
Nice and
bringing the club into disrepute.
No. Let's nice and positive. Right. Speaking of positives, before we begin, it's been so long... Bless him, Dan Blundell put together the longest spreadsheet ever of end of the decade stats. And I feel now, as we're halfway through January, I can't delve into it too deeply.
You can, it's a whole decade.
A whole decade. Well, I've shortened it. Thank you, Dan Blundell, again, for putting this together. I've shortened it, and I've got for you Dan Blundell's pop quiz.
Okay, definitely less chat, more stat. Stat me up.
More quiz, right. So I've got five questions for you about the decade that's just gone. I would like you to score... How big a Palace fan are you? You think you can get all five?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't want to be that confident. I'll give it a go.
Okay, all right, right. Let's kick things off. First goal scorer of the decade. Who was that?
First goal scorer of the decade? Which decade? Last decade. Yeah, so January 2010.
2010.
I would guess... Oh.
Do you want the fixture? If it helps.
I would guess who was playing well around then. January 2010, before we went to admin. Great season for Darren Ambrose.
Good educated guess. It was Hillsborough we were playing, and Neil Dans kicked things off in a 2-1 win.
Okay, so I've already not got one.
No.
Okay, how would I get that?
But I think you can get this next one. The last goal scorer of the decade.
Boxing Day. And then Southampton away. So that was...
It was a Saturday game.
Yeah, so it was James Tompkins.
Well done. Ding! There he goes. Let's go for the best result of the decade for Palace. And we got this scored twice.
Best result? So the biggest win.
Biggest win.
Oh, okay. Biggest win. 5-0.
Go on, yes. Against two oppositions for your bonus points.
I will remember this. One was against Brighton.
I was gonna say, I love how silence and Chris Grierson thinking is a lot of this podcast. That's what we've had to resort to.
Brighton.
No. You got Leicester. I'll finish things off. Ipswich Town. You did get Leicester.
No, I didn't.
Oh, I thought you said Leicester.
I went.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, you can't have that. Sorry, I'm giving you Leicester.
I didn't get it.
Biggest Prem win, 5-0. And Ipswich Town. And our worst result.
Of course, Leicester in the Premier League.
Of course, mate. Biggest Prem.
Not even that long ago.
No.
Benteke with the penalty at the end.
Where he slipped over. But still put it in.
I can't. I'm not thinking clearly.
Worst result. I mean, I'm not surprised you banished this.
Also 5-0. No.
Yeah, 5-0
against Wigan Athletic.
No, Derby, and then ominously the team we're about to play on Saturday.
Oh, Man City. Cool. That was funny actually. We were looking at that. So I'm not doing the Man City game. So everyone will be pleased because we won that last season.
Pressure's off. Yeah.
James, the boss, is doing it. And he said, what if we lose heavily? What question do you ask? I said, well, we've got plenty of post-match interviews from heavy defeats against Man City that we've done before. So we listened back to my old interviews after the last couple of 5-0s.
And how do you soften it?
What's your first question? Can you take positives from the first half performance?
When it was 0-0 for 7 minutes. Yeah, what else do you watch? What positives were there out there? If someone comes back from injury...
Is it always going to be tough against, a side in form like Man City?
Yeah. Anything else? You try and make it as quick as possible, I suppose.
Coming up on Tuesday.
There we go.
So quickly, is it great to have a chance so quickly to put things right, that kind of thing. But then are you really putting things right? Is there anything bad about losing to Man City?
No, not on current form. And that does bring me to... Manchester City then. Well done, you got...
Oh, is that it for the decade?
Well, I had a last one. Top goal scorer in the decade.
He's still in. Wilfried Zaha.
Thank you very much. A nice half century. 56. In second place?
Second place. Andy Johnson.
No, Glenn Murray.
Okay.
Third place, set piece specialist.
Luka Milivojevic.
Thank you. Fourth, striker, still playing, league below. Scored against Liverpool in a 3-3.
Dwight Gale?
Thank you.
No. He's not got more goals than Andy Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm thinking the wrong decade.
Yes.
Oh God.
Should we start this?
Do you know, this is why I was saying things like Brighton and Wigan. I was thinking 2000 to 2010.
This has been a joke. This has been an absolute
I tell you what, Mamma Mia the party.
It wasn't
soft drinks and it wasn't an early finish. I'm thinking the wrong decade. No wonder I'm like, sure we lost to Wigan. I'm sure we lost beat Brighton. We did. Just bring back Dan Blundell, give me a quiz from 2000 to 2010.
And Grierson will smash it. Yeah. He'll smash it. Yeah, I mean, slightly worrying we went through the whole quiz with you not knowing what decade we were in. But anyway, we're in 2020, Chris, clarify things. Right, end of the decade quiz complete. On to Manchester City versus Crystal Palace. Let's start with Palace's form. We are unbeaten in our last four league games. So got a good little run going. And we've lost just one of our last nine Premier League games. Rather encouragingly as well, when we go behind in the last nine games, we've shown a lot of fight. So we've gone, we've pulled back from going behind and won once and drawn three times. Great fight in us at the moment. City form. So this is what worries me. Of course, they had that mini blip and Liverpool just were relentless and pulled clear. Since then, though, City seem to have found their form again. They've won nine of their past 10 matches in all competitions, worryingly scoring 32 goals. And if they beat us, it'll be the first time they've won four consecutive league matches this season. So plenty on the line for them. How's our head-to-head, Chris, against Manchester City? After just trawling through, God knows what decade you were trawling through, but you did trawl through these awful...
It was before the last one, it was terrible, because I remember, I think I had something of games I'd worked there, an aggregate score of 21.
Yeah.
Something bad like that, because we'd always seem to lose heavily, even in the Cup, in the League Cup. We lost by like 5-1 or something.
Yeah.
Goal from Delaney right at the end.
There we go. He's trying to pull back some credit, isn't he? After
positive to take from the goal. Kept going right till the end.
Talk us through the goal. Yeah, no, not at all. Let's dream. So let's think. Obviously, we're looking back. That 3-2 magical win last season. We've got a chance to make history. We've never won consecutive away league games against City. So obviously, big opportunity there. But Pep does have a fine record, especially once he's lost to a team. And I mean, if you've seen, obviously, the Amazon documentary, how seriously he takes us, he's going to get his team right up for it. And so much so that he's never lost consecutive home league games against an opponent. And in fact, he's only lost 13 home matches in all of his career as a manager.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. I know what you're probably going to say, though, that his teams have been massive teams. Bayern Munich, Barca, Man City. Even so, that is immense, isn't it? And in his time as well, he's only lost more than once against an opponent. Once. So Man United have beaten them twice. Apart from that, he's never lost twice against a team, which is mental.
So that's at Man City, at one club, or just in his career?
In his career. In his career. It's mad, isn't it?
That is a very good stat.
Yeah, very good stat, mate. Right, my men to watch, Kevin De Bruyne, brilliant record against Palace. He's had a hand in 8 goals in his last 8 Prem appearances, 2 goals and 6 assists against us. And
good against anyone, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Did you watch the Wolves game? Not the Wolves game, the Villa game.
Yes, I watched the Villa game, yeah.
The pass, the cross at the end of the first half to make it 4-0. Just glorious. Absolutely glorious on Jesus's.
I've noticed he's the face of Untuckit shirts as well. Have you seen that? Their advertising is popping up everywhere for Untuckit shirts. Shirts that look good untucked. I've never had a problem finding a shirt that doesn't look good untucked. The only shirts...
It's modelled on Chris Grierson. Of course it looks good, mate.
But the only shirts that look bad untucked are ones that, like, work ones that you'd wear with a suit.
Or ones that I wear.
Casual shirts always look good untucked, don't they?
only. I mean, this is coming from.
They're not going to be our official shirt partner, untucked shirt partner, are they?
Leave it with me. But no, this is coming from a man, devilishly attractive man, isn't it? On TV, face for TV, in the stadium. So yeah, I'm sure they look good on you, mate. Yeah,
thank you.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, it popped up on my Instagram.
Of course it does. Yeah, of course it does. Anyway, enough of Kevin De Bruyne's untucked shirts. Riyad Mahrez as well, man, banging form. He's been directly involved in 12 goals in his last 13 Premier League appearances. Before you get too down, though, trawling through the stats, found a wacky one, and I'm clinging on to it as to why we can potentially get a result, and that is Manchester City's birthday curse. So it's Pep Guardiola's birthday tomorrow on the game. He's going to be 49 years old. He's going to be the fifth Manchester City manager to take charge of a Premier League game on his birthday. The previous four, Brian Houghton, Joe Royle, Mark Hughes and Roberto Mancini, they've never won.
That's a ridiculous stat.
I've never won.
But I love it.
And Mancini had two cracks at it. 2011 and 2012 with good Man City teams. Can't win on his birthday. Mind's elsewhere. He's thinking about, you know, a night out in the town with his family. It's a tough one, mate.
I mean, there's so much wrong with that stat, but it's great. It's a great stat. I mean, obviously, no person having a birthday years ago has any bearing on someone else not winning on their birthday just because they manage the same club.
Sorry, mate. If they don't win, then can we get a formal apology from you on air?
No.
And attribute it to...
No, because you just add it to the stat, but it doesn't mean anything.
It'd be even more powerful.
I do like that stat, though. That's very good. I love that someone...
It's dug like, out.
Do you reckon they dug it out now, or do you reckon they dug it out before Mancini's last one?
Well, this is it. I think they keep adding to it. So when Guardiola doesn't
they
do
can't
it,
believe they're like, oh my God, it's happened again.
It's happened the birthday stat. Add to the birthday stat. Yeah, I imagine it's happened. Stats from the game, though, to look forward to. So it's a bit of a history one for Hodgson. He'll be taking charge of his 95th Premier League game with Palace, and it now eclipses the amount of Premier League games he had with Fulham.
And you'll hear his reaction to that stat in the press conference at the end of this podcast.
Oh, I thought we were flowing next into it.
It would have been good.
Oh,
I've already recorded the links.
Good links?
Rushed, if anything.
you are a brutal honesty from Chris Grierson here.
Left it late, I was watching the cricket. I was doing work whilst watching the cricket in the canteen after lunch. Good, smacking it around a bit.
Do you see the declaration, then non-declaration?
I did, yeah.
Yeah,
it was good.
I enjoyed that, yeah.
It stopped me from leaving. We were getting up to leave after having lunch, and they declared, we're like, okay, well, let's head back now. And then, no, stay. Okay, so will I.
Yeah, bit of entertainment, mate. I like it. Cricket chat on the Crystal Palace podcast. Do you know what? That is, I could give you one more, but I don't think you want them, do you? Yeah. He's frantically tapping his watch. Well, that is it from me on the first Statman of 2020.
Thank you. Statman there. Isn't it delightful to have him back? And next up, as mentioned earlier, we've got that long extended interview with Gary Cahill. It's with Premier League Productions. They come in before every game and interview a player, and they get a certain amount of extended ones a season. And this time they've chosen Gary to do it. And it's a fascinating look at his career.
It's getting back to what you love doing, and it's getting back to what you know you'll miss when you do finish, because it's the build-up, it's the pressure, it's the one, it's the having to deliver, it's the wanting to win. The minute you lose that, the minute you may as well finish.
Gary, thanks so much for sitting down with us. From the outside looking in, it looks like the Gary Cahill Crystal Palace fit is a really good one. How's it been? How are you feeling after the first 5 months?
Brilliant. I think, like I said, it's felt that way for me as well. I think I've come through the door. I've enjoyed every moment. The lads have been fantastic, welcoming me with open arms, and obviously working under a manager who I've worked with before. So all in all, it was a great fit, and I've enjoyed it. And along with that, obviously we've started the season, or the first half, we've done reasonably well. So hopefully that continues.
Was it strange, at least at the start? You know, new kid at school kind of thing.
Always, it's always the same. You always have that feeling where, like you just mentioned, it's not just going into a new team; it's going into new surroundings, new manager, new staff. You know, you work daily with physios, doctors and people working the canteen, everything. The whole package is new. So Yeah, you certainly get that feeling the first week or so. But like I said earlier, they've welcomed me with open arms and made it very easy to settle in. So I was very grateful of that.
And what does it say about this group of players that in the last few weeks, especially when you've had so many injuries, you've not just competed, but you picked up points. I mean, the last time I think you lost was mid-November against Liverpool. That's quite something, isn't it?
It's a great record, yeah. It's something to be proud of. We've had a few draws amongst that, but we've played some very good teams. And if you look at the circumstances, like you said, with the injuries, they've done fantastically well, or we've done fantastically well. But that's what I said ever since I stepped foot through the door. I wasn't just saying it. It was a first impression. What I got from this football club was that it's a tight-knit group. It's a group of players that get on very well with each other and demand a lot and work very hard for each other. So there's no massive egos here. People know that their roles and their responsibilities, and they get on with it. So that was refreshing to see, to be honest. And that's paid dividends in the last few weeks, like you've just mentioned. I think when you do have difficult moments in terms of the squad or injuries or, you know, key players missing, for other players to come in and take responsibility to keep pushing on is good to see. So that's the characteristics of this football club and the team since I've known it, which has obviously been a short period of time.
We'll get into the Palace stuff a bit later as well, but I want to take you all the way back to the start. What's your very first memory of ever kicking a ball?
Well, very first memory, I used to... At my home, what I grew up in, we had a field on the back of our garden, where our garden backed onto an old school that had closed down, and that was where I used to play all my football. All my mates used to come from school, probably annoying my mum, knocking on the door every 2 minutes, run through the house, straight out into the garden, just used to play down there. So that's my first memories, along with school. I think you get a huge amount of enjoyment of just playing at school. Break times and, you know, obviously the school team. So probably the same kind of memories for a lot of players, but yeah, that was certainly the first time that I started playing and knew that I would love the game.
So who were your first heroes? Sheffield Wednesday fan, is that right?
Sheffield Wednesday fan growing up with my, you know, a few of my uncles, my dad, we used to go down and watch, you know, followed obviously the other teams as well, but Sheffield Wednesday, my first memory of going to watch a team in the Premier League. Players at the time that played for England, I think there was Des Walker, Chris Waddle, these types of players. David Erstwhile, Kevin Pressman, players like this who was playing in the Premier League. Obviously, when you're at school, your dream, I suppose, is always to play in the Premier League and to play for your country. And there's a few players at that time or that era at Sheffield Wednesday that was doing both. So. Yeah, so when I did get the chance to go and watch a live game, I jumped at the opportunity and went to watch and see how they did it.
So playing with your mates in the field behind the house, was it all just the love of the game, or was there a realisation, a moment when you thought, hang on a minute, you know, I've got something here, you know, I could make a career of this?
No, it's the love of the game. At that stage, I'm sure majority are young kids, they're playing football because they like to play football. And they enjoy that. Of course, the dream is what you see players on the TV and you see what they're doing, but that's a million miles away at that moment. And all you know is that you can hold your own playing football, you enjoy it, you know that you've got some sort of ability, but it's just pure enjoyment. That's all it is at that age.
And Aston Villa came pretty young though, didn't it? And what do you remember of your formative years there, and how did that shape you to become the player and person you are now?
I think I was playing for AFC Dronfield at the time, so a local team, and I was playing a year above because, again, my friends, was majority of them seemed to be a year older than me, and I just wanted to join in with them, so that's how that came about. I played there a season or two, and then a few scouts came, like Derby, Sheffield Wednesday and Aston Villa, and at the end of there we started to go for a few trials, and it went from there. We ended up going signing at Villa, probably this was about 13 years of age, something like that, I think. So still at school, still young, still miles off the end goal. So, and again, just through enjoyment, obviously.
Well, the first big decision you had to make, going out to Burnley when you were 18 on loan. How important was that season for you, first season in professional football, properly?
I remember I was playing, we was training with the reserves on the AstroTurf, and Kevin McDonald was there at the time, and he come over midway through the session and just said, look, Burnley have come in and got an opportunity to take you on loan. Steve Cottrell wanted to take me on loan. And I just jumped at the chance. I said, yeah, 100%. Like,
straight away?
Go, yeah. And I think literally that night I was packing my my bags in my digs when I was staying with another family in digs like you did. And I was straight off. And I think you probably know better than me, but a few days later it was at Tottenham in the Cup. And I'd literally got there, trained a day or two, and then played in Tottenham. We lost 3-1. And I think it was Jermaine Defoe and Robbie Keane up front. So,
yeah,
thrown in at the deep end. But that was one of the best moves that I ever made, to go on loan that period of in my career, that moment in my career. And I'm forever grateful for Burnley. And Steve Cotchell for taking me and giving me that opportunity, because, you know, to take someone at a young age and throw them in and have faith in them is a big responsibility, especially, like, you know, now for managers who are under pressure. So to do that was something that I'll never forget.
Something else you won't forget, and also being thrown in at the deep end, back to Villa.
Yep.
First game in the Premier League, remember that one? Away at Arsenal?
Yeah. I think we was 3-0 down. And I got thrown on at the old Highbury. So
Thierry Henry had two by that stage, I think.
And again, in terms of pairing, I just mentioned one there for you, Defoe and Robbie Keane, unbelievable. And then when I come on there, I think there was Thierry Henry and Adebayor. So I was thinking, is this what I've got to deal with every single week, or does it get easier than this? Thankfully, it did slightly, because obviously the calibre of them four. But I come on and I think we lost 5-0 in the end. Obviously very difficult, but at the same time, big experiences for me. And big moments, because to go and play from reserve football to go and play in front of full stadiums where points matter, and then to go on and get player of the year at the end of that was great. And then, like you said, to come back to go to get into Aston Villa's first team was another huge moment, because, you know, you've jumped up a league into the Premier League and you've made your first bow in the Premier League. So it was weird, it was a bittersweet, because obviously we lost the game, it was very disappointing, but for me personally it's an opportunity that I thought, wow, I made my first appearance in the Premier League, and I want more of this.
What was the story behind going to Sheffield United after that? Was that disappointing? Why did you make that move to the Championship?
I made that move because, looking back now, probably a bit impatient, but at the same time, wouldn't change it, because that was me, that was my personality at that moment. And so I was in and around the squads, I was on the bench and things like that, but I knew I just wanted to play first team football, because that's where you can impact things, that's where you can progress, and that's where I get the best out of myself. So I was knocking on Martin O'Neill's door at the time regularly to get out.
And as a young lad, you say knocking on Martin O'Neill's door, that's quite something in itself. You know, you're not someone who just sort of lets time go by and hope you get your chance.
No, and I think That's the way I've been majority of my career. And like I said earlier, looking back, I was looking back and thinking, wow, was I a bit impatient there? Could I have waited? But it wasn't me, and I knew that I needed to play.
And, well, worked out great, and you moved to Bolton, came pretty soon. How do you look back on those 4 years? I know it's a long time period, but those are really formative years for you, weren't they? You really made a name for yourself there. Played for England, of course.
Very much so, yeah. So Bolton came, and again, the thing with the Villa, came through the youth system, unbelievable. You know, the club is a fantastic football club, and for a young player there was great at that moment in time. And then I felt that, for me, again, when I came back from Sheffield United, was in and around, but I wanted to feel a big part, and I wanted to, you know, to be playing regularly. So hence why we made the move to Bolton. Bolton came in, I went, and that was a great 4 years. Fantastic, playing week in, week out, learning as you went on. Obviously at a young age you're making mistakes and you're learning, but like Gary Megson was a manager at the time, and again, you look back at these managers who you're very grateful to even now, because again, you have to have someone who believes in you, you have to have someone who gives you the opportunity. I'm not saying if you don't take that opportunity, you arguably you're going to get sold and you'll move on. But you need somebody to give you that opportunity, to give you 10 games in a row, to prove yourself. And like you said, I made my England debut through Bolton, playing for Bolton, which was rare as well, because there wasn't many players, obviously, in the past or present that have played for England as well as Bolton. So that was another great memory as well.
What a fantastic move next. Why Chelsea? Obviously, the pull is there, the prestige of the club, but what made it right for you at that time?
What made it right was, again, if you talk in terms of progressing as a player, I felt that I'd done what I could do at Bolton at that moment. I had an opportunity. I was at a great age to move to a big club. We had a couple of things that didn't quite come off for whatever reason. And my next step, if I could, I wanted to go somewhere where I could fight for trophies, where I could fight to win something. I felt that if I jumped in between the two, I was kind of making a step that didn't make any sense to me. So we waited, you know, it was until the last 6 months of my contract at Bolton until Chelsea came in and took me then. And obviously Chelsea, in history, had won trophies. They were a huge club in football, and that was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down.
Still though, John Terry, David Luiz, Branislav Ivanovic, you've got Ashley Cole, and for, you know, still young Gary Cahill, are you thinking, I've got an awful lot to do here to get into this team?
Yeah, no question. And I think we've all said, and I joked about it when I left them, even when I was at the club, that, you know, Chelsea maybe signed me at that moment as a squad player in terms of the players that you've just mentioned who was in front of you. You're coming in as a young, you know, potential, having not cost a huge amount of money.
So you thought that then at the time?
No, I knew that they was giving me an opportunity, but at the same time, they had belief because they wouldn't come and sign me. They had belief of what you could turn or what you could do. But had you done it at that stage, no. I'd played at Bolton. I'd not played in Champions League. I played in Europe, because Bolton was in Europe. I'd not played in the Champions League. I'd played, you know, one game or whatever, a couple of games for England. So I think on potential, they signed you. And then it's how you do from there and how you grow from there. But like you said, the players that was in front of you, the players that was already at the football club, you had a lot to do, yeah, to play regularly there.
Were there doubts? Did you know you were good enough from the start? Or?
No, it'd be arrogant to say that. I think that, but in a strange way, it was never doubts. It was more excitement. It was more hunger to just go to a big club. And again, I take a lot of experiences through my career where to soak things up and what, you know, when you see people, when you see what people have done in their career, why have they done that? How have they got to that level? And I saw it as a great opportunity. One, to play at the biggest, one of the biggest clubs. Two, to fight for trophies. Three, to learn from players that are in their prime, the top of the game, some of the players that are the best that's played in their position in the league, to go and see how they do it, to see why, what do they do. And that was a hunger, really, for me to go there. So there was no, there wasn't. But at the same time, obviously, I weren't daft enough to think I was going to go straight in and play and be the first name on the team sheet. You know, that goes without saying. But it was exciting that I could go there at the age I was, and I felt that I was, you know, keen to learn and keen to show what I can do.
So was there anything that really sticks in the mind from those first few days, first few weeks, where you thought, wow, this is, you know, another level here, and you're looking around the dressing room at all these players? Anything that you can remember, a training session or?
I think the first thing I can remember is I was looking in some ways to briefly know kind of John, Ash, Frank through the England setup. So, and I say briefly because obviously you've crossed paths a couple of times in the get-togethers. But that helped, even that. So, you managed to kind of drop in and had a couple of familiar faces. I think the first memory was, going in and looking around the changing room and just thinking, wow, like, there's some players that have done a hell of a lot in the game here. Top international players that have got, you know, 50, 60, 70 caps for their country, won titles, done so much. It's a bit of a like, wow, okay. Just the training sessions, knowing that it's gone up that level in speed. Mentally, you had to be more switched on. There was, you know, very clever players that you're training with.
Do you feel like every training session that you're, you know, this is as important sometimes as games? I've heard players say
that.
It
was for me, yeah. The training was for me, yeah, because obviously that was a time where you can, I think one of the most satisfying things, which I don't know when it came, but it was just a matter of when you're training with the lads and they had a kind of acceptance to be like, okay, this he can play. Yeah. Oh, he's got something about him. I think that was the most one of the proudest things early on for me, because I think, forget the games, forget anything, you want to go into that group of players, what I've just mentioned, which the list in terms of profiles is frightening, and hold your own and be able to adapt to the way they're playing, to the way they're training. And I think that's the most important thing, that your team, your squad is like, okay, you know, he's got something about him. And then from there, obviously, you've got to go and impress the manager and see if you can get into the team. But it's the same. And the competition throughout the start of my career, when I first walked through the door to the end, the competition was relentless all the way through. So, and that's always going to be the case at clubs like that.
You didn't have much time to adapt, though, did you? 4 months in, Champions League final against Bayern. Just tell us a story behind you actually making that game, because you were injured for the FA Cup final before that, and you had, I think, Ivanovic was out, John Terry was out as well, but you made it. Tell us how you made it.
Yeah, so we knew that that Branislav and John was going to be missing the game, and David Luiz at the time had struggled. He was out with a hamstring injury. And then obviously in the semi-final away against Barcelona, I think it was Messi who tried to run me down the line. Probably did run me down the line. And I overstretched my leg and just pulled my hamstring, and I knew. It was the first time I'd probably done that. Hamstring, and I tried to run it off. Like, I was almost reluctant to come off. But you just know you've done it.
Is that late on, or were you...?
No, it was early in the game. It was early in the first half. So that was a massive blow, because it was such a huge game. Obviously, you don't know if you're going to get to the final. You're away at Barcelona, so you're up against it anyway, and I came off. So that being said, obviously, we made the final, which was another memorable game, the semi. Made the final, and then it was just a matter of trying to, you know, get fit and trying to recover as quickly as possible to make that. And it was literally within a week or so. He's probably, in the physio's eyes, came back a lot sooner than you should have. David was also struggling, so we both started the game with two dodgy hamstrings.
You played 90 minutes and extra time.
And extra time, yeah. So no, I think you know, you'd have to not be able to walk to make that final.
Yeah.
That was my attitude from the whole rehab process. But I did miss the FA Cup final that year because of it. So that was just too early. It was, you know, they played the FA Cup, I think it was 2 weeks after. It was just that too early to make it. So that was a big blow. But then counter that by the experience we had in Munich was phenomenal. And I think a lot of adrenaline, heart, everything just plays a part. That was the last thing I was thinking about, my hamstring, when I started that game.
And then from that moment, you then became the fastest Premier League player in history to win every major trophy there is. Just over 3 years. Just thinking about that now, is that all a big blur? Can you remember little moments from each title? What sticks in the memory for you?
You can remember, yeah. But I think the blur for me was the first 6 months, the whole progression to the final of the Champions League. And then looking back now as a more experienced player, you think, wow, like, that is an achievement to make a final of a Champions League full stop. Never mind to go on and win it. And that was almost just, you know, it just went so fast. But yeah, from then on in, it just gives you that hunger to go and try and get more, try and win more. Try and maximise your whole career, you know, as quickly as you can, knowing that it's a short career. And there was always such a strong winning mentality at that club. Almost like when you drew a game, it was you almost didn't want to come into training the next day, because it was like, I had that feeling like, you know, that everyone was just down, everyone was on eggshells. But that was not enjoyable to lose a game and come in and have that for the next few days. But then it's almost like that's the sort of pressure that club had. And you buy into that. You buy into that, like, winning mentality of wanting to win as much as you can, wanting to win every game matters and all that. So, yeah, we went on and had a great, like I said, the next 3 years was unbelievable.
In the context of all your achievements over 7 years and captaining the club and titles and Champions Leagues, FA Cups, how disappointing was last season and how it ended?
It was disappointing for me last season, yeah. But I said all along, I never want to harp on about it, because for me it was a blip. It was a minor situation in terms of my career and what I've done at that club and what I've done in my career, full stop. That it's almost, it's irrelevant to me, but at the same time it's not, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I will retire and not think of that year. but it shaped me again. It gave me more experiences. It made me more grateful in terms of what playing football, you know, week in, week out is all about. It's not about that. It's not about what I did last year, and there was a lot of factors that made that happen. It was disappointing to have such a great career there and to leave on that note. But such is life and such is football, you know, you have ups and downs, and that's one of the biggest things I'd even say to young players now. You know, if you don't want the downs, you have the ups, you enjoy the ups, and you're going to get some downs. I've had a lot more ups than downs, so for me to be really sour about a situation is pointless.
Well, I was going to mention that your career, and it's all been up and up and up, and, you know, the progression all the way through to Chelsea and then titles. So it was the first time for you that you've had that experience, and does that make it more difficult to cope mentally, or does that make it easier?
I don't know. Until you have these situations, you don't know. But I do know. I do feel that I'm strong enough in mentally that I can. I'd like to think I can recover from situations. The disappointing thing with that was that there was never a period of. I came back from the World Cup really late. I missed all the pre-season. I missed all the tactics of the new manager who came in. He's a very superstitious guy. He'd obviously worked with the other players, and he saw defending totally different, probably totally different, I'll be honest, totally different to the way that I would see it. The way that he wanted some things done, he was very alien to me, and some of the things I didn't quite understand in terms of why he would do things like that, but that, again, that's his style.
Did you feel out of it when you came back?
I felt like I'd just started from here and everyone else was there, because it was almost like, not just football-wise, it was tactically, the shape, the way that he wanted things doing. The tweaks was made, it was totally, like I said, it was different. I could see it for ages and tell you the different things that he wanted. But everything was different. So that takes a lot of time on the training pitch, which I didn't have. I came back at the Charity Shield.
Talked to about it? In terms of where you fitted in?
Not until I came back, no. So it was almost like everything was catching up. By the time we caught up, we'd won 6 or 7 games in the Premier League and you're on the back foot. And then the season played out the way it did with a lot of other things involved in that, which, again, there's no point speaking about. But, it was disappointing. And, like I said, going back to my first conversation with you, if you give a player a run of 10 games, 5-10 games, if he doesn't produce and he doesn't deliver what you want to deliver, no problem. But that was never the case. So again, I'm confident. I was confident in my ability. If I had 5-10 games on the spin, like I've proved the whole of my career, then it would have been a different story. But that wasn't to be.
What did you do? How do you keep yourself fit? How do you keep yourself going? Did you do it yourself?
Yeah, no. We had time. We had opportunities to go to have a look at some things in January. It wasn't right. I think it's the first time that I felt so frustrated, because you always want, you, like I said, again, going back to the first time I spoke to you just earlier, was you can only impact things when you play. And when you've not had the opportunity to play, you can't impact anything. So I knew I was going to go. It's different as well when you're in the last year of your contract, you probably know the situation. If you're looking at a manager or someone who's trying to build for the future, is he going to use a player who might be leaving in 6 months? Some people would, some wouldn't. All these situations, so I knew I was going to leave, but it had to be right when I moved. There's no point making rush decisions. You have to make the right decision to make sure, again, that you're going somewhere where you know 100% it's the fit. But again, there was disappointments early in my career. If you look at the Villa, at the time, Aston Villa was doing really well. It was definitely not an upward step from Villa to Bolton, and I don't mean that in any disrespect. At that moment, Villa was doing well. I think they were probably 6th or 7th in the league. So again, that was a moment of, okay, I'm not playing here. So there's always little disappointments throughout your career, even though the majority, like I said earlier, the majority of my career has been mainly up, and that's something that I've been proud of. And when I reflect, when I finish, that year will be nothing.
I was going to say, actually, have you always had the feeling that you've had to keep proving yourself no matter what you achieve? And even if you're captaining your country or lifting a Premier League title, has it felt like that?
Yeah. For sure. I think, I don't know if other players feel different, but the way that I felt is always that.
That's good, right?
Yeah, and I think, again, giving you fire in your belly to go and prove people wrong, or to go and keep consistently delivering at that level, You win a few trophies. And these trophies that I won at Chelsea was not trophies where I played four games. The titles you win in the league, you play nearly every game and you're a huge part of it. And that's what it's all about. And for you to keep delivering that, but then keep getting questioned maybe a year or two later.
And I think that's exhausting, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but I think that's the same. I'd bet a lot of players would say the same. You're never going to please everyone, but you know where, you know, at the end of the day, what you've done and how you've done it speaks for itself. So that's the only way you need to answer people. But I think you do need that in you. You need that.
Fear of failure?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. You need people behind you, in front of you, pushing you. You know that you should. Especially somewhere like Chelsea, like I said, if you didn't do the V, you would be sat on the bench. And that did happen as well. But, you know, thankfully not very many times.
You never look that happy sitting on the bench.
No. That's exactly. And to be fair, apart from last year, I didn't go many games in a row when I was regularly on the bench. So you might go one or two or three. You'd either get rested or rotated, or maybe if you did it a bit of bad form, you might be out two or three games. But I can't remember it being many more than that. So again, that shows that you've done something right.
Still 21 minutes total Premier League action. When you come to Crystal Palace and you're picked to play Manchester United away, are you thinking in your head, God, can I still do this? Am I, you know, does that run through your mind?
That still baffles me. Like, for me to, he's crazy, because I know obviously that last year was not great, but to miss the whole season, almost take a season out in terms of playing.
What, to hear those 21 minutes?
Yeah. But I've never done that in my life. It was
45 games, isn't it?
It was crazy. And I think I don't know, again, you might know more than me. I'm sure I averaged something like 45, 50 games or something before then. So to go from doing that to nothing. Again, something that I was proud of, again, to keep fit, to keep your head, to keep fit, to keep match fit. We did over and above towards the last few months. I knew by after Christmas what was happening. I knew the situation and the deal and all the rest of it. So I had to get my head around and be selfish in terms of my fitness and training more, even leading up to games. Thursday, Friday, where you'd normally tail off, even going more after training. And I did that to benefit my career, which has paid dividends, because, again, fast forward, I moved the season and I come in against Manchester United away and played the full game and managed, you know, conditionally, fitness, sharpness was not too far off.
Well, I was going to say, and you're modest because you're man of the match as the first Palace win at Old Trafford in I don't know how many years. Did that game, in a way, beat the finals and the titles, because it was you proving to yourself and to a hell of a lot of other people that you were still a top defender and you could play 90 minutes in this league?
No.
Okay.
No, but I know what you mean. I knew I was still ready to compete at this level. Like I said, it was not down. In my head, it was not down to that. It was down to a lot of things. But like I said, given 5-10 games in a row, then I'm sure it would have been different. So in my head, no. It was more of just wanting to get back out there. But again, straight 100%, there would be many people after that year that will have thought, nah, he's gone. Like, he's off it, or he's lost his legs, or he's this, or he's that. 100%. Clubs and people and everybody. So yeah, I think it's satisfying now that you come back and you're back to a level what you expect from yourself, and playing in the Premier League where I feel I belong, and playing with a great bunch of players and manager.
And it's not just the game itself, is it? It's the build-up in the week, it's the battle for the 90 minutes, and then, I suppose in a funny way, it's nice having that soreness in your legs the couple of days after.
It's getting back to what you love doing, and it's getting back to what you know you'll miss when you do finish, because again, it's the build-up, it's the pressure, it's the one, it's the having to deliver, it's the wanting to win every week that you go out, and that's the most satisfying thing. So when you said to go to Manchester United, what was the most satisfying thing was to win away at Manchester United, to have that feeling of winning, and pushing the team, because the minute you lose that, the minute you may as well finish, and it's still well and truly in me to go out and try and win and to try and drive the team and help drive the team with some other huge characters that are in there. and to push the club that you're at as far as you can.
Has that come across straight away, the big characters in that dressing room?
Yeah, there's quite a few in there, 100%. And like I said, that's shown with the way that we've started this season. They've been consistently a strong team. When I used to play against Crystal Palace for Chelsea, it was always difficult. But now there's some very good players in there, characters and players. You know, you need the characters to be in there. You need the players to be in there. You can't survive without both. So it's a good club. It's a great club to be at.
How big a factor was Roy in you coming here?
Very. He was a great fit. I knew how he worked. I knew what he was like. I had him at England. So I knew what how he trained. I knew what he expected from players. And that was when I spoke to him. No, it was something that I knew was right.
What I've noticed from games is, you know, you always were vocal, but it seems like you've almost gone up a notch here with barking orders and organising the defence. Is that something that just comes naturally to you, or is that something Roy said, like, I want you to come in and be like that?
No, it's not. It's just, I don't know. It's funny you say that. I feel like I've kind of always been the same in my career, but more and more as I've got older, maybe I'm doing a bit more.
Get grumpier when you get older.
Yeah, getting a bit hardier. I think it just goes back to wanting to try and push a team and impact a team that you're in, that you're at. And it was the same at Chelsea. I mean, for me to come from Chelsea, rewinding all the way back from when you said from Bolton, going into that dressing room at first and looking around and being like, wow, to then end up captaining the club was an unbelievable achievement for me. And I suppose you're given that for a reason, because you work hard, you train, and you want to push whatever team you're in. And that's the same when I came here. I wanted to see if I can impact the team. And whether I will or not, we'll see come the end of the season. But, you know, I'd like to think that I've added something along with some of the other big characters, like I said earlier, that are in there.
And what is being a leader to you? Are you born with it? Do you kind of develop those skills? Is that something you've always had?
No, I wouldn't have said. I think as a young player coming through and looking at the more experienced players, I think at that age, early on in my career, I was more like a sponge where you're soaking everything up. You're seeing from the best, none better than John Terry when he was at the club, and seeing how these leaders do it. And then maybe growing into that role a bit more. I think the older I've got in my, or the more experience I've got in my career. So, but I think a leader's, you know, you can. Some, it's funny because you see people talking, they say, oh, he's a leader because he's shouting his head off while he's doing this and that. It's not always the case. You could be that, you could be both, you could be the other way. I think when you see a player doing things that should be done, working hard in training.
Leading by example.
Yeah, as well as leading vocally, because in my position, I feel like I'm vocal in my position when I play on the pitch. As a person, I'm pretty laid back. When I train hard. And then maybe them sort of attributes. I mean, I've seen many players over the years that have had different attributes, but are still leaders.
Standards, what though? If people aren't meeting standards, will you be someone who'll tell them?
Yeah, I think, and I think there's a lot of people. We're blessed here, like I said, with people who do things right, who work hard, who know what, who are professional, and I think people who don't do that are never taken well in the group. You know, people want to win, and by winning, you want to do everything right. So I think there's not many, but yeah, for sure, you know, there's enough characters around that'll tell somebody if they need to be told.
So looking ahead, Gary, Manchester City away, that's no longer a daunting thing for this squad, is it? Is that exciting, more than daunting?
It's exciting. It's still a difficult place to go. Let's be truthful about the fact of going to Manchester City, home or away, is a very, very tough place to go and play, whatever club you're at. So we know it's going to be difficult. We know there's a challenge the weekend, and we know they're going to have a lot of possession. So we're going to have to be at the top of our game, for sure.
Has Roy got out the clip of last year's win, Andros's screamer? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah, that was unbelievable. That's one of the best goals I've seen, I think. Unbelievable strike, that. And unfortunately, he'll be injured.
Yeah. So he hasn't been talking about it.
Oh, he spoke about it a few times, yeah. It was a shame we can't rush him back for this game, but no, that was a great win for last season for Palace. So something along them lines would be great, wouldn't it?
So Gary, just going all the way around, if someone had told a 13-year-old Gary Cahill playing for Dronfield with his mates that you get over 60 England caps, win everything that's going in the game, what would you have said?
Yeah, I'd have probably just done that reaction. Probably just laughed at you. But it's when you say it, when you hear it back, it's great. When you're in the moment and you're still playing in your career, you're just focused on the next thing, on the next game, on the next session, on the next this and that. And then I think more so when I finish my career and reflect, I'll be like, yeah, that's, you know, I've done well. I've worked hard, I've done well, I've been blessed with some opportunities and I've taken the opportunities. So that's been a fantastic career and, you know, long may it continue.
I know you've got a few years left in you yet, but for someone who leadership comes naturally and you're a thinker of the game, is management something you've thought about?
I'm not sure. I think at this moment, I'm not sure, because I still feel like I'm fit and I'm in good condition to keep playing for a few more years yet. So we'll see. I think I'll do my badges. I think I'd be silly not to. And then, you know, see. Let everything at the end of my career just calm down and be like, right, okay, what do we do now? But like I said earlier, I'm far from that. I feel in good condition, feeling great shape. You know, now that you're kind of not in the England setup and stuff, you miss that massively. When I see the games, I miss it hugely. These sorts of moments give you time as well. And I feel that I'm in good condition. So we'll look at that in a few years' time and see.
Just, you brought it up. If that call came, would you play for England?
I shouldn't have. No, you'd always play. You'd always play. So
you haven't thought about it?
No, because it's just naturally run. We know where that is. We know the situation. The manager's fantastic. He's a great manager, a great person. And we know that situation, so that's fine. Like I said, when I do see the games, you do miss it. But no, it's all good. And again, someone I've been proud of to captain and play for England has been phenomenal. So we keep going, but I've had some great memories in my career.
Well, we look forward to the next chapter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's Gary.
Gary Cahill there. And we finish, as always, with Roy's press conference. And he's being very entertaining at the moment. He's absolutely destroying some questions that get asked about transfers. So I hope you enjoy.
What's the team used for this weekend?
Well, it doesn't change that much, but obviously we were hoping to recover Max Meyer, but that's not been possible, so we're one further player down. But Joel Ward, who's been missing for a long period of time now, he returns. Scott Dann returned, of course, before the last game. But we're still a lot of players from our intended first team down, and the bench once again will be made up largely of players from our under-23 squad. Mm.
Manchester City must bring back really special memories of last season.
Yeah, it was a wonderful game we had up there. I mean, obviously we under a lot of pressure, but we counter-attacked well and we were able to win the game, and of course that is quite a rare event for Man City to lose a game at home. So we're happy with that, but unfortunately you can't live on that, and now we've got to go and play them again. And I must say I fear them, because they are such a good team.
It's a very open league, isn't it? A couple of wins and you're looking at near the top six, and then a couple of defeats, you're looking at the bottom six. How do you assess the league this season?
Well, I think there are two really outstanding teams, which in actual fact are a long way basically from most of us. I guess teams like Leicester and Chelsea and Tottenham and even Arsenal and Man United, they'll protest that there isn't such a great gap between them and Liverpool and Manchester City. But I personally believe at this moment in time there is a gap even between those two teams and the ones I've just mentioned. And of course the gap then down to the other teams in the league gets even greater. So when you're preparing a team to go and play Man City, it's a very difficult and daunting task, because you know that they've got so many weapons that you're not certain you have the weapons in your armoury to deal with. But it's an honour and a pleasure to be going there, and I think that our players need to understand that, well, that's going to be a hard day, and that we're going to be under the cosh for long periods of the game. Possession is going to be firmly in their favour. Our goal is going to come under enormous threat for long periods. It's still the reason we're in the Premier League. We're in the Premier League to play these teams, even though I would have to say there is a definite difference between the two teams.
Victor Camarasas left the club. Why, in your opinion, didn't it work out for him here?
It was nothing to do with him. I mean, he is a certain type of player. Obviously, his competition for places in the centre of the midfield was strong, and we have players who've been doing a very good job for us over the last three seasons in there. So it wasn't easy for him to break in, and of course he was trying to break in at a time when we were actually doing quite well. But he was a good professional, he worked very hard. It's no discredit to him that he didn't get into the team. It was quite simply choices, and I had players to choose, and unfortunately I chose others in front of him. But I wish him well now in Alaves, and I'm pretty certain that he'll do well there, because he's undoubtedly a talented footballer. But he was confronted by players perhaps equally as talented and who had the shirt nailed down.
I'm told Nabil Bentaleb wants to come back to London, but do you feel you're well stocked in that area?
Well, a lot of players want to come back to London, don't they? You know, I mean, quite frankly, we are a London club, but we're not here just to be a home for any player who goes abroad and then decides he'd like to come back to London and can't get back to the club that sold him. I've got to be honest with you, Bentaleb's name has never once crossed anybody's lips at the club, so I'll leave that one to you with your speculation.
Christian Benteke, been linked with a move to Bordeaux on loan. Do you feel he needs a bit of a freshen up, or would you like to keep him here this January?
I just can't believe I'm being asked the question, if I'm perfectly honest. I really can't. I cannot believe in a serious press conference someone's going to suggest, where we have very few forwards anyway, a player that we're badly missing because he's been out injured. Is we, the football club, or I, the coach or manager, are seriously considering loaning out what is potentially one of our best players to a club in the French division? I'd love to know where the story's come from. I really would. But I still find it a little bit hard to believe that, you know, when I ask a question, I do sometimes think, well, is there any point in asking that question? Because I know the answer. But we have to sit here every week and answer these questions, which come from nowhere. Mm. And frankly, you know, it's not quite as ludicrous as Wilf Zaha on loan to Bayern Munich. It's about 10% less ludicrous than that.
It surprised me, but obviously it was in the papers the last few days, so I thought I'd ask.
Well, luckily, I can only say then I'm very happy for not reading newspapers like right. Perhaps I should.
Is there an update on Carl Walker-Peters between?
No, nothing about that. There was an initial contact, I think, between the clubs, and the suggestion was made, which I was were certainly behind. It would have been a good move for us, I think. But as far as I know, nothing's happening, and I've got no idea what Tottenham's intention with Kyle Walker-Peters is.
OK. All in all, looking at the squad over the next few weeks, is still the right-back and the left-back situations and potentially another striker? How do you assess it at the moment? Because I know you've got so many injuries.
Yes, I mean, going into the window, we were hoping for two strikers and full-back cover, both at right and left-back. Potentially, maybe, a bit of extra cover in midfield, maybe a different type of player to the type of player that Victor was, but someone who could take his place in the squad. We were looking to, you know, research those possibilities, but of course nothing has happened so far other than the fact that we've managed to get Cenk Tosun on loan for Everton.
So still hopefully a few then?
It's open. I think we're in the same situation as a lot of clubs. There doesn't seem to be a lot of movement at the moment. I do follow the television. I don't read all the newspapers with all these stories, but I do follow the television. And it doesn't seem to me there's an awful lot going on other than the same stories being constantly repeated.
Thank you.
Roy, when you look back at last year's game at the Etihad, did that kind of sum up what your team give you in terms of the unity of purpose and everyone pulling for each other?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of summing it up. I think that the last two seasons have certainly been marked in some ways by the fact that the team is constantly in situations where they can't seriously be expected to produce a result. They've gone out and got a result, and a lot of it has been to do, I think, with the way they play for each other, the way they understand the game and their roles in the team. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of point looking back in time anyway, and certainly there's not a lot of point looking back in time and believing that because we did it last year we're going to do it again. I think that would be very foolish. We need to go there once again in full humility and to understand that we're going to be confronted with a team which is really absolutely one of the very, very best in Europe, quite capable of winning the Champions League, enormous squad of players. You know, when I look at their bench tomorrow and I compare it with our current bench, it's going to be a little bit frightening in terms of what they can do to change the game if they want to change it. But that's understandable. You know, Man City are a team that are fighting to win the league and win the Champions League, and we're a team that are fighting once again to preserve the status that we've been lucky enough to preserve for the last seven seasons. So we're looking forward to the task, we're looking forward to the challenge, but for me, last year's victory is no more than a pleasant memory and certainly has no effect whatsoever on how I think about the game tomorrow, or how we will confront the game tomorrow.
I recall a game at Selhurst Park against Man City, it might be two seasons back now, when there was an injury late on. You sat with Pep for quite a while, just chatting while they were dealing with it. I mean, there's obviously a lot of respect between you two.
I like to think so. I mean, certainly I have a lot of respect for him. I can't speak for him, of course, but, you know, it would be almost impossible not to respect what he's achieved in the game and the enormous success he's had wherever he's been. And also, I happen to appreciate the way his teams play and the way he handles himself in interviews, which, of course, is something I do watch and study because I find myself often in a similar position. It's always nice to see how other managers deal with those situations. I've got to say, I think he deals with them quite brilliantly. So it'll be a pleasure to meet him again, albeit that I don't think I'm going to get an awful lot of pleasure from what goes on from the first to the final whistle. But we'll see. It's nice to know that it's a possibility.
I gather that this might be the 95th Premier League game with Palace, which will actually take it beyond what you've done at Fulham and other clubs.
I've worked there myself.
Given you, you know, what happened at Fulham or your achievements there and that length of spell you had there, I mean, what do you look at this Crystal Palace spell as? Because, I mean, obviously where you are in the league now, you've taken them a huge distance from where they were.
Yeah, I'm proud of the time that I've been able to spend here at the club. It's been a good three seasons in my opinion, and I do think we have achieved a lot because, you know, we've done it really on pretty much a budget which hasn't allowed us to go out and spend a lot of money to improve the squad or to strengthen the squad. You know, quite the opposite, really. I think probably in the three seasons, there's been no clubs that have actually spent as little money as we have in terms of transfers. So I'm pleased with what this group of players has achieved because I inherited the bulk of them. You know, even today, it's a very small percentage of players that have come into the club during my time as manager. I'm still working with players who've been brought in the past, and luckily been brought in the past because there's some very good ones amongst them. But I'm proud of it. I was very proud of the Fulham time, of course. The Fulham time will always, I suppose, be to some extent elevated above Crystal Palace simply because we got to the final of a European Cup competition, which really was above and beyond what people could expect of us. But I honestly believe that the challenge that I've faced here is equally, or could be certainly compared to the challenge at Fulham. And I think the two jobs in many ways have been parallel jobs. And I'm privileged to have worked at two such good football clubs in London, which is always helpful. And I'm hoping that the 95 games will go at least and get me past the century mark. That's the next goal. Five more to go after this one.
Okay. Can I just ask about Cenk Tosun as well? How's he looked to you in training? Is he possibly ready to start?
Yeah, I think obviously he's ready to start because he's physically fit to start. But I still think he probably needs more time with us, and he needs more time, you know, as close, if you like, to a starting position as he is with us, which he's not necessarily been in that situation with Everton. So he's still, if you like, finding his feet here, moving from Liverpool, settling his family, finding a house, all of those type of things that people have to do when they move. And you can't expect them to suddenly just snap their fingers and it all to fall into place.
but he's certainly working at it, and he's got a smile on his face, and he seems happy to be here. And, you know, we're hoping he's going to be able to do the job that we have brought him in to do.
Thank you. OK, Stanley, at the back.
Hi, Roy. The Africa Cup of Nations organisers have changed the timetable for the tournament from the European summer to January once again, which means next season, this time, you will be without four of your players. What do you make of that change? And secondly, some have suggested that some managers have found it difficult perhaps to sign African players because of this technicality. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, is it definite that it's been moved, or is it a suggestion?
It is definitely. It has been moved. Yeah, they announced it yesterday. Yeah.
Well, that'll do us a lot of harm, and it will do a lot of other clubs a lot of harm as well. There's no question of that. Whether or not this will have an effect upon African players being signed, I guess the answer to that might well be yes too. Maybe a bit less so in the clubs that carry a very big squad of players, you know, the Man Cities, the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, Chelseas of the world, that carry a very big squad of senior, recognised players, perhaps a bit less so than in clubs like ourselves. But unfortunately, a lot of the African players who do come here, they come to clubs like our own. So I don't welcome the move, of course, because it's going to make life very, very difficult for a 5 to 6 week period. We have to play a lot of games without some of our best players. And I don't quite know at this moment in time, because I've not discussed it with the club hierarchy, what their thoughts on the subject would be, because we're finding it very difficult at the moment to deal with 7 or 8 players missing from our first team squad. If we're going to miss 4 definitely, not through injury, but because they've got to go to the African Cup of Nations, you add probably the sort of injuries that you're bound to occur by the time January 2021 comes around, we're going to be once again in this situation for maybe as many as 6 games, which is a substantial part of a 38 league game season. You know, those 6 games can be the difference between survival or relegation. So it'll be something very seriously, I think, for our hierarchy to think about. And it's going to put the players, African players, at Premier League clubs, because they want to be at Premier League clubs. They want to be here where they earn a lot of money and where they think their talent is being well showcased. It's going to put them in a very invidious position, because it means they're going to have to leave their club in a situation where the club's very unhappy to see them go and is even lamenting the fact that your going to the African Cup of Nations may cost us our place in the league. But on the other hand, of course, their national team is calling them and they want to play for their national team, because certainly the African players that we have at the club are proud to play for their African clubs. So that's my view on the subject, for what it's worth, but it won't make any difference if we are being confronted with a fait accompli.